Welcome back to Labor Press, the show about labor and the laborer. Here are your hosts, Neil Tappel and Bill Holfeld.
Welcome back to Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer. I'm your host, Joe Maniscalco. With me is co-host Bill Holfeld. Bill, how's it going?
Everything's going pretty well, Joe. Alex, as usual, was just brilliant. He lays it out so simply so that a layman can understand really complex legal concepts.
And just to remind everybody, Alex's column runs on laborpress.org on the 1st of the month and the 15th. So please navigate over to laborpress.org to catch the latest. And right now, Bill, we're going to hear from Jessica Yance. She's a Teamster with Local 210. She's a crane operator, and she drives a bunch of other heavy equipment vehicles. And she was one of the trade unionists that recently went down to Puerto Rico to help the hurricane survivors. And I had a chance to interview her yesterday, and we're going to hear it right now. So we're sitting here with Jessica Yance. She's a Teamster member for Local 210.
Yes.
And you just recently came back from Puerto Rico.
Yes.
Tell us how long you were there and what your first impressions were when you arrived.
I was there for 2 weeks. We were in a United flight that they volunteered for all unions, from nurses to doctors to Teamsters to plumbers, all type of jobs to go and help in Puerto Rico. I kind of thought it wasn't, from the news that I saw here and everything, I didn't think it was going to really be that big of a deal. But as soon as we arrived to the airport, a lot of people were in shock, because when you look out the window, you saw all the palm trees gone. You saw the roof of the airport in certain areas that was teared off, so people were working on it. So as soon as I got there, that's kind of, the shock hit me. I was like, wow, this is serious. And then as soon as we got there, even the airport didn't have electricity and things like that. So it was kind of hard.
So now you're trained as a crane operator. You're trained on a bunch of different other kind of heavy equipment vehicles. That's what you do for a living.
Yeah.
Talk about what you did there to provide aid, and like, how did you know where to go and what to do?
Well, honestly, when my union asked if I could go, I was willing and able to do anything. So even though I'm a crane operator, I was willing to do anything else. So at the end of the day, actually, I got along really good with a group of nurses and doctors. So I kind of went with them, and we helped give food and water, and I translated for them when they needed to speak to people about certain medication they needed to take, or taking them to the hospital, or any simple task, like I helped them with that. So that was kind of what I mainly did. And we also helped with homes, tarping a lot of homes, because a lot of the homes, no roofs at all. A lot of people lost their homes.
So I was just reading a quote just before you sat down from Lynn Manuel, and he was saying how, you know, because he's doing a lot, you know, personally to help out. And he feels like, you know, the relief effort is good now, but still, like, there's still the playing catch up.
Yes.
Do you feel that?
When I got there, I felt like we were honestly the only ones doing anything. I saw FEMA, but they were doing a lot of paperwork with the people of Puerto Rico. We were actually working for the people of Puerto Rico. We went door to door. If they needed any medical attention or any food, we also gave them knowledge on what to do with water, because a lot of people started getting sick because of the contaminated water. I didn't see people working on electricity. I didn't see people working on the roads or anything like that. I felt like Teamsters started that movement over there.
Right, so like you went with the Teamsters, but you also work with the nurses, New York State Nurses Association, other nursing groups are out there. CWA was out there.
Yeah, we operating engineers, plumbers, electricians, laborers. Like I said, it was volunteers from a lot of unions that got together for that.
And what are the conditions of like the schools and the hospitals there?
The hospitals were okay. The schools, they were used for homes. we went to a lot of schools, but the classroom were used, you could say, as apartments for people that lost their homes. There was no way for them to stay in it. So we went there, too, to give them medical attention. And they had food, but not a lot. So they would serve the children first, and then the adults would eat afterwards. But, yeah, all the schools that I went to, they were not schools anymore. They were temporary shelters for people that lost all of their belongings.
So just to remind people, we're about, like, 2 months out since the Hurricane Maria hit, and more than half the island is still without power.
Yes.
That's going to take a huge toll, you know, people's spirit, their mental health, never mind physical health. So can you talk more about that, the people that you met, what kind of state that they were actually in?
A lot of them were in shock because they said that, you know, they love their island. This is what they said. They're like, we love our island. They're like, but this, we felt with this one, we were going to die. Like, we go through hurricanes, but this one, we felt like we were going to die. The way we heard the wind at our doors, we were really scared. And a lot of people cried, and a lot of people were in shock. And a lot of people are just, they don't know how to restart the building because it's, you know, losing a roof maybe, but these people lost everything, so they have to start from scratch. So that's kind of a difficult thing.
So after being there for the amount of time that you were there, how would you assess the overall relief effort, the response to this?
I felt we did a really good job. We try to hit every town in Puerto Rico, mainly the, you know, like Luisa, outside of San Juan a lot. We did help San Juan, but the other areas were really bad. But we tried to go everywhere, and I feel like that really helped a lot.
Do you think about going back, or do you think about the people that you met, you know, that you left behind there? Do you have family there?
No, I don't have family there, but I'm, you know, I'm a Latina, so as soon as I got offered the opportunity, I said, yeah, definitely, just because I want to help anybody. So it didn't matter to me at all.
I know that a lot of people are so devastated that it's like, I think it's like over 140,000 people now since the hurricane have left the island. Did you encounter that?
Yeah, a lot of people, a lady that I spoke to, that she was crying to me, told me, she was like, you know, my mom and my father think that they're going to Florida to visit me. They don't know they're not coming back here. Mm-hmm. A lot of children are almost like kidnapping their own parents because they're very stubborn and they want to stay there, but it's not safe. And a lot of homes that we went to, everybody's leaving. I heard that you couldn't get a flight probably until January, February. And then on top of that, the flights are so expensive. They raised the prices on them. So a lot of people that want to leave, they can't leave for financial reasons.
So in a little bit of time that we have left, talk a little bit more about being a tradesperson, being a union person, and what this has meant to go out and to be of service this way.
It was eye-opening to me and life-changing in the fact that, you know, you see things on TV and you hear about it, but being there and actually seeing people suffering, I felt like I was in a third world country, and Puerto Rico is supposed to be a part of the state, so that was very shocking to me. I feel like they still need a lot of help, and they didn't get the help at the time that they needed. It should have happened right there and then, and they're still not getting help. So that was pretty bad for me. But in my position, I'm just, as a tradeswoman, I just feel like the willingness, the hard work that we put in our everyday jobs, because it's very physically demanding, I feel like that helped us in the days in Puerto Rico. You know, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day, nonstop for 2 weeks. I felt like that gave us the will and the power just to keep going and helping as many people as we could.
And, you know, we were talking about the unions pitching in and doing this. You were able to do this because your company covered you.
Yeah.
Let's give a shout out to them as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Sims Metal Management, they were really, really supportive on the situation. And thanks to Teamsters, and we get along really well, that they made it happen. And they, you know, I'm very grateful for them for that.
All right. Great, Jessa. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, there you go, Bill. Just like in 9/11 and every other disaster since, American labor unions rising to the occasion and helping out. And I think right now we're going to flip it back to you for your spotlight on American labor history.
Thanks a lot, Joe. On November the 17th, 1878, progressive era reformer Grace Abbott was born in Grand Island, Nebraska. She was no stranger to social justice issues as her Quaker mother participated in the Underground Railroad and the woman suffrage movement. Her father was a leader in state politics. After graduating from college, Abbott left Nebraska in 1907 for the University of Chicago, completed a master's degree in political science, and joined the residents of Jane Addams Hull House. For the next 9 years, she gained national recognition as an advocate for immigrants. As head of the Immigrants Protection League in Chicago, she established a way station for recent arrivals near the main Chicago Railroad Terminal. She worked for legislation to regulate employment agencies that frequently exploited immigrants and convinced officials at Ellis Island to extend their protection and guidance beyond New York Harbor. 1914, she joined the staff of the Department of Labor and was assigned to the Children's Bureau, where she investigated and reported on issues pertaining to child welfare. She implemented the first federal law restricting child labor, and by 1921, she was head of the Children's Bureau. The Children's Bureau led the campaign for a constitutional amendment limiting child labor, and although never ratified, the amendment set a precedent for New Deal legislation regulating the labor of children under the age of 16. In 1934, Grace Abbott retired from the government, but she left knowing that through her urging, the Social Security Act would provide assistance to mothers and children, and that she had created new professional opportunities for women in government administration before her final death in 1939.
Thanks, Bill. That does it for another episode of Labor Press's Blue Collar Buzz. If you like us, follow us on Twitter at Labor Press NY or email us at bcb@laborpress.org. Find us on Facebook, and come on back next Sunday night for more Blue Collar Buzz here on AM 970 The Answer.